In this episode of the Alternative Blacks podcast featuring Carbon Copy, we discuss their efforts to create an inclusive space within the craft beverage industry, from fair treatment of employees to listening to feedback from their community. Our guests also explore their vision for the future of their brewery and their mission to make wine more accessible and inclusive for all. Stay tuned as we uncover more about their journey in brewing and winemaking and how they're leading the change for diversity and inclusivity in the craft beverage world. Get ready for another insightful episode of the Alternative Blacks podcast featuring Carbon Copy. Don't miss out. All right, so we're back with another round of beer. What are we drinking?
You are drinking the Gully, which is kind of like our more like modern IPA. And Chris is drinking a Spur, which you had before, the West Coast. You made it sound so good. He's like, I need that, you know?
What's your thoughts?
I'm in heaven right now. That was very delicious. I guess one of those things, to get on the brewery talk, like with new breweries, a lot of times you kind of figure, well, you know, they got to get their recipes in order, and especially when you're scaling things up, if they don't have a lot of experience, sometimes the beer is just a little too conservative on the flavor of what they're going for, and I usually wait 6 months to a year until they really hit their groove. But like with you guys, with all that experience, the two beers I've had are just so like on the money. Just like you guys have come out the gate full force, like sprinting.
Thanks, really I appreciate that.
Yeah, really impressive.
But cheers to that. I will say though, like Tyler and Hannah said, they came like opening weekend. Like we had a small tap list. Like we had only started brewing like a month or a few weeks before we had opened. So we were definitely like rushing to the finish line to get like as many beers and like a wide variety as possible. But we only had like five beers on draft.
We tried the whole five.
Yeah. I mean, that is nice with a small tap list. You can just kind of hit them all.
And like full course.
Nice.
Yeah, and some people would be like, oh, why don't you have this beer and this beer and this beer?
Like, why don't you have a Pilsner on? It's like,
we actually
have all of them in
the tank, but you know, we weren't going to rush any kind of beer out just to be like, look, we have variety. Yeah. It's like, no, like, want to put them out when they're ready.
And I think that's a commendable way to approach those things. You know, you're wanting to appease the customer and the community, but at the same time, you don't want to give them crap just because you want to get a product out.
Yeah.
You know? So I really commend that, and I think you've done a great job with these beers. I mean, this is fantastic.
Do you like the beer?
It's cool, you know.
It's all right.
It's cool.
Yeah, and we're hoping there's a resurgence of a West Coast IPA, I think.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Please.
You know, I think with like the more modern, big, a little sweeter, juicier kind of IPAs, people are kind of taking that to an extreme, and some people are kind of bringing it back, which I think is part of the reason why like things like Pilsners are extra popular right now. And I think some dry and bitter beers are something that people are coming back to enjoy, and even that I think we could make a little more bitter, but got to ease people back in.
Oh no, just smack me over the face with bitter. I'm all ready for it.
So we're currently working on like a collaboration beer with another brewery, and during our conversation with that was always the conversation. If we were going to a beer festival, you can either go with the flow and like what's popular, like the hazy IPAs, or what I found through my beer experience with Dock Street and doing some of their festivals was their Pilsners actually did really well at festivals because it was something to break up the monotony.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a palate cleanser almost. It's like refreshing. Like sometimes people bring their biggest, like most flavorful beers, like whether it be hoppy or like a big imperial stout, and like that's all well and good, but if you're drinking a bunch, like you're gonna get like palate fatigue. You need something to kind of like break up the heaviness, you know. So
yeah, people don't use water for that at beer festivals.
No, just to they rinse the glass.
Yeah,
at the,
yeah.
They're trying to get their money.
Like,
worth,
oh wait, we
you
can
know?
Drink this.
But I kind of wanted to talk about collaboration at this point. We love that your brewery like really promotes diversity and collaboration. How have you like worked to foster partnerships with underrepresented communities, other like just communities in general as well? What advice do you have for others
looking to build collaborations?
Yeah, I mean, like, we've only been open for a few months, so, like, we haven't done, like, as much as, like, we've wanted to do, but we have a lot of goals that we're trying to get.
Right.
And, like, so as far as, like, offering people advice, like, I don't know if we're the best because we haven't been open that long, but, like, I would say just, like, being open and willing to engage and, like, collaborate with people and opportunities as they present themselves. Like, one example is, like, y'all reached out to us and, like, actually educated me on the Barrel and Flow Festival. Like, I was aware of it, but I didn't know to the extent of the collaborative, like, ways that they operate the festival. And,
right.
like, after looking into it, like, I we're friends with Ben Wang from Plowman Cider, and last year he did a cider with the Cider Johns from Philadelphia. So, like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, getting, like, people to, like, team up. So, like, you reaching out and, like, letting us know that, like, we signed up and now we're, like, set to be a collaborator with someone, and you're collaborating with another, like, brewery in Philly, and I think, like, that's really cool. Like, we've also, like, reached out. We're planning, like, Philly Beer Week is coming up in June, and we're in talks with, like, two locals about, like, brewing a beer with them and kind of, like, having, like, an event in West Philly, you know, because, like, we're the only two breweries out here right now. Mac Brewing's out here too, but, like, he doesn't have a location yet or
right.
anything, but, like, but yeah, it's like, and they're in planning, like, building their spot out, but yeah, just trying to, like, there's not much out in West, and there's a lot of space to grow for everyone, you know, so.
Yeah, I think another thing that's important is, like, the realization that you don't know best, or we don't know best, so reaching out to other people to get a better perspective. Like, we took a class at Community College of Philadelphia, and one of the, it's kind of like a business power
up. It was
like
power up your business, and it was like a small business course that's free through CCP.
And one of the businesses that were part of that was called Reify. They're like a company that helps other companies with DEI goals. So we worked a lot with them about just kind of understanding the neighborhood more, kind of talking about, like, the industry as a whole and what kind of things, like, we can do better, and how we can try to be a better part of the community. So,
and that actually kind of leads me to another one of the questions that we had is, like, what does being an active member of your neighborhood mean to you?
So another thing, like, you know, we're hoping that, you know, if we jumped back in a year from now, we'd have a lot more to say about what we have done, but things that we want to do. Can some of that being as small as, like, getting a host of people to just go do some type of cleanup, or, you know, if they need help, like, remulching some part of, you know, one of the parks around here. Any small thing like that, free beer or free beer is a good motivator.
You know, like, do some work and get free beer afterwards.
Yeah.
Do an infrastructure check on all the signs.
Yeah.
I've definitely been checking them out. Any new sign
some
I see.
Fresh concrete has been poured.
Dude,
yeah.
It's like, they're pros.
Yeah.
No one's going to go the wrong way down that block ever.
Yeah.
That new sign is legit.
Yeah.
But I, you said that it's a small thing, and it is a small thing in terms of, like, I guess, effort and money, but it's a huge thing in the city to do things like cleanups and to get people, the locals, out to do these things. And a lot of times when, you know, the businesses in the area are the ones facilitating that, it really fosters that sense of, oh, they actually care. And so often I think businesses don't take that opportunity to do it. And I think it's a mutually beneficial, you know, situation for everyone. But I think it's really impactful, because a lot of cleanup, obviously, you go around the city in a lot of different areas, it's just like there's trash everywhere. There's not enough garbage cans on every corner. There should be a garbage can on every corner.
Look,
and there's not. So
after we got this dog, we started to really realize the lack of trash cans.
Yeah.
And
you just gotta carry around a little bag of dog poop with you, you know, like,
gentlemen.
Yeah.
Always will pick up the poop.
But yeah, and that's, like, one thing we can do that, you know, isn't just like, oh, here's, let's, like, try to throw money at this thing or donate beer, which we're definitely down to do. And, you know, I think the whole thing about being an active member of the community is, and like I was saying earlier, like, realizing that, like, it's important to learn that you don't know is reach out to people that are community leaders and part, like, you know, have been part of this neighborhood for much longer than we have, that really understand what the neighborhood needs and, like, if we have resources, how can they be utilized for, you know, for the neighborhood. So we're hoping to get some of that stuff, you know, worked up spring, summer. We've been kind of chasing our tails, trying to keep everything afloat.
Yeah, I mean,
here for
I
the
mean
best
3 months
way, but,
in, I will say it's overwhelming to do, like, to open a business and keep it going. So, like, we're trying to, like, make sure that, like, we have the support for, like, our staff and make sure that, like, our operations have been, like, solid and everyone has what their needs before we can, like, spread ourselves too thin and do not 100% of every job that we're working on, you know?
Yeah, and I think some of the collaboration kind of stuff, you know, whether it's, you know, with another brewery in West Philly, like Two Locals, or even working with some of the other local businesses around here to try to, you know, promote what they're doing or team up with them and do a collaborative event that benefits something else.
I'm all for a collaborative event. You know, those are always really fun because I think the personalities really come out. We were just over in Delaware, Autumn Beer Project, I believe is what it was called.
Yeah,
Autumn Beer Project. So there's another podcast that, down there that kind of focuses on what we do, Brews and Banner podcast, and they did a collaboration. And they just did a collaboration beer down there.
Cool.
It was the 200th episode. They did an extra strong bitter ASB. That was fantastic. We had it last night.
We did have it last night. That's right. It was fantastic.
It's a fantastic beer. So the collaboration events really bring out a really unique set of people into a brewery, because there's a birthday party going on, a 200th party going on. It's a lot of fun. But you guys had mentioned something that I wanted to kind of dive into a little bit too. It's making sure that you guys, you know, are paying, you know, obviously paying the staff, right?
Yeah, of course.
But I think, you know, without getting too much into, like, the Tired Hands history of everything, I'm sure anyone that's listening knows, like, what eventually happened, like, after, especially what surfaced after you guys left. Just how do you guys show up for your staff to make sure that their needs are being met? You talked about the kitchen being a high turnover, you know, spot. What are you guys doing to really show up for your staff?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're doing a few different things and always, like, the most important thing is to just, like, be there and, like, be communicative and, like, taking any, like, suggestions, like, to heart and trying to, like, implement them into regular service. Like, we actually had a meeting last week with, like, the whole front of house staff just to kind of, like, see where everyone was and if there was any suggestions, and we did get a lot of good feedback. For our servers and everything, like, also, I will say as a side note, like, the restaurant industry as a whole is a very messed up situation, and, like, the way that the pay structure is and how it's, like, tip-based is ideal, but it's just something that, like, exists, and we have to kind of, like, work and try to, like, make it work in the best way for our staff. So, I mean, for front of the house, like, we pay $5 an hour plus tips with a guaranteed 15 minimum. So, like, even if it's really slow, like, you're at least going to be making $15 an hour, which in our minds is, like, should be the minimum wage at least, you know, like, even though it's still at, like, 7-something, and it's been that for so long.
Right.
For our kitchen, like, I think it starts at, like, 16 or 18. And also we have a 3% kitchen gratuity added to every bill. So if you're ordering food, like, though that fee gets dispersed to everyone who's working in the kitchen. So it's like, if the kitchen's, like, really busy and they're making a lot of food, like, that shows up later in their check, they get, like, more money, you know? Like, I've always thought that, yeah, like, it's so wild that, like, back of house, like, they're working just as hard, if not harder, than front of house. But, like, the way the restaurant structure is, like, but you tip the front of house, but not the back house. It's like I said, I wish that there was a way that, like, the whole system can be reformed. And some people have tried to kind of, like, change it, but we're just trying to make it work for our staff and just keep it. And we're always here, too. I mean, hopefully not forever will we be here all day, every day. But, like, every day, like, Brendan and or I am here. So if they have any questions or problems, they can come directly to us. We're also, like, here assisting. Like, right now, like, running food, cleaning tables, like doing everything that we need to make sure that we can kind of like form a solid base foundation of like what service looks like in our tap room and build on that.
Yeah, and I personally really appreciate that. My girlfriend is a cook. She works back of house for places. And the structure, like you said, is messed up from the beginning. Even the front of house structure where you're getting paid $2 an hour. And if the people don't tip, then they don't tip. You're not making your money.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that thoughtfulness into what you guys are doing. And I do think that makes a huge difference for morale, turnover, these types of things. And I really think you're going about it the right way. So I really do appreciate that. And actually, the new place she's working at does this new structure where it's kind of like a gratuity thing across the board for everyone, even front of house and back of house I can't remember it now, but I'll jog my memory and we could talk about it afterwards.
Yeah, we could talk about it. Yeah.
Just
sure.
As like a suggestion, because the person who suggested this structure actually came from Philly
everyone else,
right?
Not, everybody.
It seems like everyone.
Because right? I feel like everybody in Philly is from Tire Man in some capacity. I'm sorry.
It's like the entire web. It's just...
There's a lot of former employees out there.
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy to think about what we were talking about at the beginning. It's like, oh yeah, well I used to work with this person, they're over there, and then this person, they're over there, and they're over here, and it's really crazy and impressive. This person came from Philly, working in the restaurant industry, and that structure is more common down here, actually, I think, and they're trying to bring it to Lancaster, which is where I live. So. And it's more fair throughout the whole process, and it boosts everyone's pay a little bit. And I just think things like that, innovative structures like that, or just really just thinking about the employees and fairness is really the way to go. So I do appreciate the way you guys are going about that.
Yeah, and then I want to leave some time for you guys. Through our communications, you had a couple questions that you had wanted to ask us, I would love to get into that a little more too. But before getting into those questions, the last thing that I wanted to ask you was, how do you approach making your brewery an inclusive space for people of all backgrounds and identities?
Yeah. Well, you had commented about the way it looks compared to what it was before. It was a little less inviting, so our goal was to, we didn't want it to look like a just like a brewery or anything like that, or the old kind of mindset of craft beer, like the stone you're not worthy kind of bullshit. Like it's like it's so stupid. Like I don't want to go, like, who wants to go to a place where you don't feel like you feel like you're a bother to someone or like unwelcome? Like, wanted to make a nice space that was inviting and bright and a place that you could actually sit in for a long time and feel comfortable. And, I wear a lot of black clothing, but I didn't want to be in like a dungeon every day. So we took all the tin off the windows, painted it, some more brighter colors, which, kind of coincide with our, the palette on like in our branding. And, one of the things, when we're like, what do we want, like, from employees? Like, I want them to be nice.
Right.
That's like and we've got a great team, and everyone is super nice. And
so nice.
And yeah. So, like that, having a little bit of everything, we added some non-alcoholic options, like some non-alcoholic beer from Industrial Arts. They're good friends of ours, and they're...
I didn't realize they had non-alcoholic.
Yeah,
options.
It's called Safety Glasses.
Yeah, it just,
that makes sense.
Just came out. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah,
really?
It's really good.
I don't know.
Well, no, I also have my reservations. Like most non-alcoholic beer I've had, like almost tastes like sweet, like unfermented beer. But
yeah, they do a really good job.
Yeah.
Then we got some some soda and some apple juice for kids. You know, there's a lot of families in this neighborhood, and wanted to make sure they felt welcome as well. So, you know, we've got a more open floor plan than, you know, we could have probably tried to pack stuff in a little bit more, but wanted to try to have a little bit more space. And that way, if, you know, you have your kids and they're in a stroller, or, you know, they need to put a high chair there, we got that.
We love a kid-friendly bar.
Yeah.
We sure do.
Yeah. Yeah, can't have any dogs because we're a restaurant, but hopefully, you know, we're working to get the outdoor set up so that way, you know, all the furry friends can come, hang out.
So your dog can come and terrorize everyone else. Yeah.
Also, to build off what Brendan was saying, is like our menu is like more like vegetable focused. Like there are some meats, but mostly vegetable. Also, like caters to different like diets, like vegan, or we also have like some non pork options if you're halal or anything like halal options and stuff like that. So
that's really touching into the Philly.
Yeah, that's a very Philly.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and just trying. Yeah, like you said, just trying to be. Like a choose your own adventure spot. Like if you want to come have a couple beers, that's cool. But also we're like working on getting like an ice cream machine. We have an ice cream machine set up, so we're gonna have like soft serve. So like also you can use. Yes, it's working right now.
Does your mind go to Bob's Burgers or McDonald's?
Oh, McDonald's. Well, also that's funny because like we've had a little rough couple of weeks. We're still getting it figured out. We got a tech coming out, but it's working right now, so we can have some ice cream later for sure.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if it was going to be decorative like McDonald's or not.
So yeah. I mean, they definitely set the precedent that you don't have to have ice cream if you say you do. So
that's true.
We've benefited from that, but we're working to have it all the time.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But yeah, you know, eventually we'll have some. We've got wine and a variety of beers, and eventually we'll have some cocktails.
Yeah.
Kind of working. Been slowly building up all of this stuff so that way, you know, it's another thing with like setting the staff up for success is like, let's get everything dialed in and then we can, you know, throw another thing in the mix, like, you know, making cocktails and all that kind of stuff.
And also, like we were talking earlier about like the variety of like beers, like we're trying and offering wine and also eventually liquor is to like give people who maybe haven't experienced craft beer, like kind of like a gateway in. Like if you just come in for like a gin and tonic or something, and then you're like, oh, I'll try a beer. Or like, there's also a wide variety of beer. So if you're like, oh, you don't like this kind, like we've got like a roasty beer, or like, we also just came out with like a light lager that's like 4.5%. So it's like, if you just want like a regular beer tasting beer, like we have that too. And then maybe next time you might try the Bindle and have a little bit more bitterness, you know, like we are trying to just like be an open, welcoming space and offer like a variety of things so that everyone can kind of like experience it in their own ways.
No, we definitely appreciate that. That's one of the things that we really have focused on as we think about what the different phases of our brewery might look like. We're wrapping up on time for the episode, so I know you had a couple of
questions, and actually
we're gonna try to power through this.
Yeah, building off what you said, like, because y'all had told me that you wanted to open a brewery and that you were starting to homebrew to kind of like get experience in that, and I was just kind of wondering, like, what made you choose like wanting to open a brewery rather than just like a beer bar? Like, I understand that there is like insanely low like black owned breweries, it's like less than 1%,
right?
But like, is it more about like making the product and serving it, or also just kind of like getting like being black owned and like showing it to maybe people that haven't had beer or the opportunity? Because like when I think about it too, I think of like the wine world traditionally is also like there's a barrier there if like you don't know, and like that's only just something I experience and like try to like put into perspective. And I'm just curious as to like what you're looking like in a brewery. Like, are you gonna brew all the beer, are you gonna hire a brewer, or what's your I mean, also I know you're just planning it, so you might not even know at this point. You know, we changed our plan several times in the build out phase, so
that's kind of that was kind of part of our plan. Is we're going to, step one is homebrew, understand the process. Is this something that we want to do physically ourselves or get a brewer?
Yeah.
As far as the, you know, opening a brewery, I think it was just more of, that's just generally where we have gravitated towards hanging out. Like, that's our space. Like, well, let's go to this brewery, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess at the time when we started getting into it, that's really where the craft beer was. You know, when we hit 21, I think, you know, that's really still where craft beer was in the breweries itself. Yeah. And now there's more tap rooms. There's more craft beer available other places, but I think that's just kind of where we gravitate towards. Like, we want to come to the place where they're brewing. We like to see the vats and people working in the background. It's really cool. And I think, you know, like you said, right now the representation isn't there from an ownership and production side. Mm-hmm. And we found this fantastic community through this podcast, this Black craft beer community, and we just kind of want to put ourselves in and be a part of that.
For sure.
I think that's why. But also to your question, I guess we were never really thought of, oh, we could just open a bar.
Well, I mean, there's also like many different sizes. You don't have to open as like a huge brewery, you know? Like, I know a lot of people that like start on like a smaller scale and then just like upgrade. So like basically what you're kind of doing right now is like home brewing, turning pro is like a
very common story. Because we were, you know, we've rubbed elbows with, you know, Harris Family Brewing, if you've known them, mm-hmm. and they're trying to get their brick and mortar going in Harrisburg. And I wish they would, because it's literally 3 minutes from my office.
You'll be done a little bit earlier every day because of that.
Exactly. I'm going to have to leave early. I have to pick up the kids.
Another doctor's appointment?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to pick up the kids. Just.
Yeah. This is kids.
Yes.
And I think like a really big part of brewery versus just like a bar with good craft beer was the very first episode that we did of this podcast. We went out to one of our favorite craft like beer spots. I call it the Candy Shop because it has so many good like beer options. Mm-hmm. And I would go in like a kid in a candy shop, not knowing what I wanted.
No one else calls it the candy
shop. It's only me. Only me.
I'm trying. No one calls it. It's
not a candy shop by any means. But we went out with a specific goal in mind. It's like, we're doing this podcast about being Black and craft beer, so we're gonna go find a Black beer to talk about. And we realized that, like, culturally, there was references to our culture, there was, like, everything there, but there wasn't a beer that we could find that was made by a Black, like, owned brewing company. And so I think that really put it into our mind, where it was just like, okay, what's going on here? And we started to look into it more. And then what really solidified us wanting to open a brewery was I was in... they have a clubhouse every Monday, being Black and Craft. One of the owners from Crowns and Hops was in there. And he was just like, if 60 breweries open next year, that puts up that's 100% increase in Black-owned breweries.
Like, yeah.
And that was really like, that's when I called him up. I was like, do we want to do this? And that's where we were like, okay, let's make that intentionality behind it, because looking into creating those inclusive spaces and looking to really make it feel welcomed was just like, we'll have a lot of conversations with people. That's partly why we reach out and just like, hey, we want to talk. Because I think what you said too is just like, you're open to hearing those suggestions, and that's all we really want. We don't think that craft beer is a intentionally exclusive place, but we don't know how intentionally inclusive
for sure
it's being either. And so we really wanted to open up the space that we know is going to be a little more welcoming, but then also start with the conversations, because it's like, it's hard for us to have influence if we're not a part of it.
Yeah.
So I, long answer short.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Or short answer long.
Short answer long. Yeah. Yeah, no, I, once again, I think being a Black-owned brewery, the impact, the additional, just the statistical impact that has is huge. So I think that's kind of what we want to aspire to, you know. And maybe by the time we get to the point where we can do this, it won't be quite as impactful, but that would be great too, because that means everything's going in the right direction.
For sure.
But still, you know, that's the goal we have, because we can be a bit pessimistic with things. So I think we don't know what it's going to look like in 5 years from now, 6 years from now,
yeah.
when we would like to open this up, and it still might be that situation where we're a necessary part of the community or the craft beer space. So that's kind of why brewery makes sense for us, just so that here is the actual product being made. It's by us. We look like you. We understand you, you know.
Yeah. Trying to be the FUBU of the...
For us.
FUBU.
Us. By us.
FUBU.
Yeah.
The FUBU.
Yeah. FUBU.
FUBU.
We're going to have to beep all this out so we don't get copyright infringement, but...
Okay. We're really dwindling down on time, so I just wanted, one, to thank you guys
for being here. Thank you so much for having us.
You talked about Cider John's. They were really the driving force of getting us out here. Like, I saw that they had come out for the opening. I was like, hey, is it worth it? And they're like, get out there.
Yeah.
So was Colin.
Yeah, and so was Colin. Colin was a very, very huge part of getting us out. With the, like, maybe 2 minutes we have left, if there's any last things that you want to say or ask, this is your moment.
This is your moment, Brendan. What do you have to say?
Forever hold your peace.
Yeah.
We can never do another one of these.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll also just add that, like, we talked a lot about Beer Day. I know this is a beer podcast, but we're also making wine in Philadelphia as well to try to, like, bring down, like, make it a little more approachable to wine as well, because I feel that wine also isn't as inclusive as it could or should be. And, like, there's not that many wineries in Philadelphia. There's a few other ones that are also, like, I mean, I know Mural City Cellars and Comuna Cellars, like, and Mural City is black owned. So... yeah, we're also just trying to kind of like make wine more accessible to people as well.
I love that.
Love it. Absolutely.
We can have a whole wine episode if you want. Almost
have one. I literally follow up episode about the wine.
About the wine. I'll sit behind the camera because I'm not a wine person per se. I'll be the one behind the camera. You got it. Yeah, we'll just switch out.
But,
no, I'm just saying it's 1 minute.
Oh, yeah. Okay. One minute.
But again, I just wanted to thank you guys for being a part of this. It really does help open up the space. You are, I think, technically the second brewery that we got to actually sit down and talk with. Okay. And it's a huge part about trying to open up and be a little more inclusive. You guys just showing up and inviting us out to do this is a huge part of what we are trying to do. So I just want to wish you guys success with the future of this brewery. Absolutely. We're going to check in a year.
Check in a year. March 27, 2024.
It's going to be the anniversary. Every season we'll have an episode with you guys. But thank you again so much.
No problem. Thanks so much for having us.
And until next time.
Peace.